So I think we agree on that. So what are we going to do? All right, we need to flip this. So you notice that the bottom of the slide is those bad things reframed. And some of this is already happening. One of my favorite examples is if you look at a good palliative care team, they're mostly operating very much on the bottom part of this slide. All of you have had now or have had or in the past have had experiences in teams and agencies where this is good. So again, I don't want to portray everything as bad. It's just there's way too much of it. We need to think of a notion of human investment. So that elderly person who needs long-term care is not just a cost to the system, but is somebody who is put into society, who is somebody's grandmother, who is somebody who counts whether or not they're going to live, die, or pay more taxes. We definitely need to focus on a notion of caring as well. And I know I'm talking to an audience who understands this. So curing is important, but so is relief of suffering and caring. And hence, our attention on things such as better pain management are crucial. So that means that we see health or well-being, because of course there can be well-being in both chronic illness and death are the kind of goals that we want to think about. And here's the reframing that I think would get us out of the widget approach. Is healthcare works, and there's even research that shows that, even research on patient safety, which is becoming much more prevalent these days, points out that an awful lot of safety problems are related to communication. And both philosophically and from our research and from what we believe in as professionals, as nurses that we share with everyone in this room, we know that it is the quality of relationships that makes healthcare work. And we need to spend much more time to argue for carving out emotional, moral, fiscal, structural space for those relationships so that people can spend time with each other on the healthcare team, with their patients, with family members and communities. And that means really a significant philosophical shift. Now, there's evidence of that shift in various places. I must say right now, most of the evidence I see is at the national level. So one of the things I think politically, with the health accord just recently being signed and moving on, is to start to nudge the feds a bit and our MPs as well as our MLAs to start to help some of this happen. Now, if we go to the next overhead, I want to get more concrete around some strategies, and I'm going to tell you a little bit about a study we're doing right now, just because we're learning about strategies from the nurses we're working with. Now, when we've done our early research, as I said, it's not all bad, and what was really clear is that one of the most important things, especially in this time of trouble, is having supportive peers is crucial. So if Deborah and I are working on an intensive care unit together, and all hell is breaking loose, we don't have enough staff, we're trying to cope, we're going to do well if the two of us support each other. But what's going to really be devastating for Deborah is if I turn around and snipe at her. I can't emphasize this enough for Deborah or anybody else, that how we are with each other, we have to be more careful of than we've been. And by that I mean that the support we give each other makes a huge difference to the moral climate. I'm not just saying be nice and everything will be fine, but what I am saying is that in addition to working on the structural and the political elements to make space for ethical practice, we need to be much more reflective about how we are with each other. Now, if I'm snapping at Deborah, there may be a good reason from my standpoint, but I need to be able to take a breath and say, something else is going on here, and it doesn't belong to just being nasty to my colleague. Because the reverse is, if we pull together, we're able to accomplish so much more. All of you have got lots of stories like that. Having time to reflect about our practice is important, being able to share problems. So the research about what the problems are is quite compelling and quite well documented from multiple places. The research about what to do about it is not so clear. So exactly what would help get us out? Now, it's not to say we know nothing, but we have a lot to learn about what will make a difference. Because of that, we can go to the next overhead, thanks so much, Melody. Because of that, we started what's called a participatory action study, which means that you don't go in to just observe with people, you go in, observe, work, plan, strategize. So what we have done is, we're just in the third and final year of a research project where we're collaborating with staff nurses in two sites. One is on Vancouver Island. It's an acute medical oncology unit. The other is in the Lower Mainland, and it's an emergency. So you can imagine it's an interesting place to be right now with everything that you've seen in the press over the last while. So we've had the great good fortune to be invited in by nurses in two sites. Actually, we were invited to more than two sites, but we could only do two, to start to collaborate with them to figure out, okay, what would start to make a difference. So if we go to the next overhead, I'm not going to give you too much detail, but what I want to focus on is what we're learning in terms of results. But just to say that in doing this, it's running in sort of three phases. Now, even though as a team we've done a lot of research in what might make about the problems in practice, the worst thing we could do would be to leap in and say, oh yes, we know exactly what will fix your unit. Because the whole point is it's nurses and other healthcare providers within that unit who know best what will make a difference in their site. So for approximately the first year, now it looks linear here, but it's not. You go back and forth like any decision-making process. But we wanted to spend time, observations, interviews, meetings, to figure out what's this particular acute medical oncology unit like, what's its history, its story, the challenges, the physical structure, and similarly for the emergency unit. What we then did was, in both sites, we asked for people who were interested to come forward to be clinical research team members. So that means on both sites, we have groups of staff nurses who've become clinical researchers. And on the acute medical oncology unit, it's configured slightly differently, but we have at least 10 quite committed people, and we've got about 7 or 8 on the acute medical, or on the emergency unit. And we have other people also part of it more peripherally, but who've been very intensely engaged with us. We're at the stage now of trying out some, planning some interventions and evaluating them, and we're especially interested in sustainability. Now, if we go to the next overhead, what I want to mention on, before I say what the results are, is it's changed us as well. If you go in and do field work and interviews like this, it's definitely made me more radical. I didn't actually ever start out radical, but every study's made me a little bit more radical as I listen and hear some of the same kinds of issues. But we've been learning, we've been engaging, negotiating with each other, reflecting with each other, laughing with each other, crying with each other. We've been really trying to understand and live through what might make a difference together. Well, I think we'll skip, we'll go past that entering the field because I already mentioned it. Go to the next overhead. Thanks, Melody. This is the big aha for me, and it's got a little bit of detail. You've also got it in your overhead, but the box on the upper left-hand corner, environment, and this has been data that we've particularly analyzed coming out of emergency, is when we started, we knew that resources were short. There'd been a lot of cuts. Colleen Barco and I had been doing a lot of publishing and presenting on that. We knew that the resources and the constraints to healthcare, the closure of acute care beds, the closure of long-term care facilities, the workloads nurses were carrying, casualization of the workforce, we had a pretty strong awareness of that, and in fact came in pretty upset about that. And just if you walk into any emergency in the Lower Mainland, you get more upset if you spend about 5 minutes in there and watch how people are lining the halls because there are no beds. The acute care beds are filled with admitted patients, most of whom actually need long-term care facility. So we really thought we would focus strategies on the environment, and that will still be the case. But we also learned, and the staff themselves helped us understand this, is that unless we also look at how people are with each other, we won't really fix the problems. In other words, you could have every bed you needed, good resources, but if we don't spend time about how people are with each other within the healthcare team, there'll still be problems there. So the bottom box means it's both. It's thinking about how nurses are with each other, how nurses are with doctors, how new nurses are with older nurses, how older nurses are with new nurses and so forth, how we support each other. That point that I said earlier was so important for Deborah and I on that acute critical care unit. Now, if we go to the next slide, the goals that we have, I just want to say that we're clear, and these goals we've crafted together with the clinical nurses and ourselves. And this is a message, by the way, that we have not delivered well politically as a profession, and we need to always keep front and center. When we argue what we need as nurses, the next words out of our mouth need to be very visibly, because it makes a difference for patients, families, and community well-being. And we all know that, but sometimes we don't profile it enough. Medicine makes the same mistake in political arguments, that our goals ought to be held right up front so that as we're talking about what we need as a profession, that's evident. So we know that that will only happen with improved work environments, and that means improved relationships within the department, the hospital, the community, and the region. And let me just read you a transcript excerpt, a story from a nurse, because you've been hearing from me. I want you to hear from one of our research participants more directly that illustrates some of the relationship part here. Now, this was an interview with a nurse who works in the emergency department, and he's talking about an arrest where an ICU nurse comes down to help. Now, before I read you this, you need to know I was one of those ICU nurses who came down, because it's going to look critical of her, and it's a story that, so I don't want to paint all ICU nurses as bad or anything like that, but this stuff does happen. So here's the nurse. What she's saying is, usually in a code, ICU nurses come down to help. There was this ICU nurse who came down. The patient who had the code was in his 80s, but he'd never been sick. He was doing pretty well. He was playing crossword puzzles, chess, stuff like that, and came in with what he thought were sinus problems, and all of a sudden he had a cardiac arrest. So we called for help. They were in the trauma room at this point. So the ICU nurse came in, and the first thing she says is, "What the hell are we doing with this gentleman?" So she battled throughout, and we said, meaning the eMERGE staff, "No, we're going to keep going." And I said to her, "I understand what you're getting into, but we need to find out the reason why he came in. He wasn't sick before. He hadn't been having any known cardiac problems." But she said to me, "I'm not listening to you anymore." And I said, "No, we're going to listen." This is in the middle of the arrest. "No, we're going to listen to each other. And that's what a code team is. We communicate to each other." So I actually told her, this was a fairly new nurse, by the way. This had been hard for her to be so assertive with this ICU nurse. So I actually told this ICU nurse, "You know, if you don't want anything to do with this code, it's your choice. I'm not forcing you to be here." But she stayed and she went out looking for the family and then found out that the family was being taken care of with social workers. And then afterwards it became a battle of, "We're ICU nurses, you guys are eMERGE nurses, and I don't have to listen to you." That stuff never happens, does it? So it's part of our dark side that we need to work on. And I have to say, I've certainly probably gone down in a snit myself from time to time, but hopefully not that badly. I'd have to ask past colleagues. But you can see that the fragmentation and the isolation between ICU and eMERGE was just making the relationships that were required worse. And this is true in all areas of healthcare, that we need to understand each other's realities better. If we go to the next overhead, what we need to understand better is that that it is how we are with each other is quite important and is going to make a difference to the quality of care. So as we've stepped back and thought about what we've learned in this study, and these are themes that the eMERGE nurses themselves have come up with, by the way, it's not just an academic analysis, we've realized that we need to take those things that are going wrong in that transcript excerpt and lots of other examples and strategize how to make them better. So what we want to do is move from that notion of scarcity that resulted in what was out and out ageism about that elderly man who came in. And as you know, by the way, biomedically, age is not an absolute criterion. It's only part of what other diseases do they have and so forth. So there was an ageism that was part of that ideology of scarcity. And instead, we want to move to that notion of investment. That one was borrowed from Colleen. The others, though, have really come from the team themselves.